this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Reporter. Very special guest, Josh Peck. Folks, man, if you don't know who Josh Peck is, you're living under a rock. Josh Peck, his website, sharpeningreport.com. His YouTube site is Josh Peck Disclosure. And, of course, you can get him also on his website, Josh Peck Disclosure. And, of course, we'll be linking. We are linking via Hagmann Report to his websites. Our guest for the remainder of the broadcast, which is a treat because we're going to be talking about so many things. John Robertson really mapped out a great, just a great show, and Joe and Josh, and I know Josh has got, of course, a relationship with Tom Horn, Skywatch TV. Their book Abaddon Ascending. It's something we need to talk about, especially in light of current events. Before we get to Josh, I want to remind everyone once more, you know, the taste of a good steak, hard to come by, right? You can go to a steakhouse and pay oodles of dollars for a good steak experience. You don't have to do that anymore. OmahaSteaks.com in the search bar, HH. Go to OmahaSteaks.com, and as soon as you get there, put HH in the search bar. Let me tell you something. We found the perfect gift, the perfect steak package. It's called, it's my family gift pack. So when you go to OmahaSteaks.com and put HH in the search bar, you're going to be presented with a number of visuals there, one of which is my family gift pack. When you go to OmahaSteaks.com and enter HH in the search bar. But let me tell you about what you get in this My Family gift pack that's for $49.99. It's under $50. You cannot beat the price. Imagine walking into a steakhouse and what you pay. And consider that against the context of this. The My Family gift pack has two filet mignons, two top sirloins, and two boneless pork chops, and four boneless chicken breasts. Again, I could stop there just for that price, but there's more. You get four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, 12-ounce package of all-beef meatballs, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha steak seasoning packet, which gives the steak that boost, that steakhouse flavor, plus four additional kielbasa sausages free. That's in my family gift pack. You cannot beat the price. We've had so many compliments over this as a gift that we've given. And of course, we've cooked up the steaks. We've cooked up everything in the gift pack for ourselves and for company. And we've had nothing but compliments. This is one of the best buys I've ever seen at OmahaSteaks.com. So go to OmahaSteaks.com, enter HH in the search bar, and there, or from there, order My Family Gift Pack at a 77% savings, $49.99. You can't beat it. Now, and do it for the holidays. Oh, do it for the holidays. Treat yourself this Christmas. Josh Peck is our guest.
We met Josh in November of 2014.
It's been
that
long.
He's the author of several books. I got some here.
Yes, you do.
Disclosure, one of his first books, Quantum Creation, as well as Cherubim Chariots. And these are fantastic reads, folks. If you have a chance, get these books. He's also co-authored a book with Anthony Patch pertaining to CERN.
Revising Reality, right?
Yeah, Revising Reality. And we're going to get into some of this stuff tonight.
Tom Horn with Abaddon Ascending.
Yes, and his latest book, Abaddon Ascending.
Yeah.
This is with Tom Horn, co-authored by Tom Horn, and I'm sure this is going to be one of the hottest books in this season, as Tom, a great author, always very insightful and goes that extra mile in his research and writing, and Josh does, you know, the same thing, and he brings such a unique perspective because he understands a whole bunch of things that us laymen don't. The quantum physics and a number of other things that are very technical, but he's going to explain
those. But they make sense, don't they?
In his words, when he puts it, the words on the page and puts the book together, they make sense to a point where the average people like me with no technical knowledge in these fields can understand them.
And the thing I like about those, Joe, is and Josh, you've succeeded and making the Bible come alive. It, the context of your books against Scripture, against the Bible. My goodness, I understand that the Bible is a tremendous historical document, but it's also loaded with physics and loaded with creation, quantum creation. Mm-hmm. It's just an amazing thing, and you really do a great job in connecting the dots on that. So thank you for doing all of that. So,
thank you for the kind words and for having me on the show again. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, we have too. Now, going to ask you right out of the chute, Abaddon Ascending. How in the world did you and how did you hook up with Tom Horn, and how in the world did you get interested in this line of research? And even if you want to tell people what Abaddon Ascending is about, and then explain how you got involved in this.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Abaddon Ascending is me and Tom's attempt to show how CERN actually plays an active role in Bible prophecy, but also in a lot of really strange things that's happening in the world today. And it's not even just about CERN. It's quantum technologies and how vastly it's shaping the world around us, but in a way that most of us aren't aware of. The unique thing about CERN is that they don't really, at least as far as we know, the strange things that they're doing, they're not making it a secret. They're actively talking about on their own website how they want to open a portal to other dimensions and try to communicate with something that might be inhabiting higher dimensions. They make no secret about this, which is strange. But the issue is most people, they have been told, we live in a world that tells people things like quantum physics are just too complicated for normal people. So, just stay away from it. But all of that is ridiculous. Quantum physics is perfectly accessible for everyone. And I hope that I'm living proof of that, because I consider myself very much a layman. But, a lot of the problem is physicists and scientists usually speak a different language than we do. You know, they speak in these big technical terms where you gotta have a dictionary right next to you to be able to make out anything that they're actually saying. But when we take all those just enormous ridiculous words, but just speak plainly, you know, speak in the way that anybody would talk to anybody else, a lot of these things are accessible and they make a lot more sense. So it was actually funny that you mentioned how we met back in November of 2014 at a prophecy conference in Ohio, because back then that was I was just there to take part in one panel and sell a couple books and stuff, but I didn't have like a presentation. But that was my first conference. I was kind of new and upcoming, and you guys graciously invited me on your show. So the first show that I did with you guys was phenomenal. I had a blast, and it wasn't even that long ago. It was only a couple of years. So you asked about how I got hooked up with Tom Horn. I have been doing my own show, the Sharpening Report, and which is like an interview type of show that deals with Bible prophecy and stuff like that. I had been doing that. I had been writing Quantum Creation and Cherubim Chariots. And luckily enough, Dr. Michael Lake, who you guys are familiar with and your audience is probably familiar with, as it turned out, he was familiar with my work. And this was right when Skywatch TV was first starting to put programs on the air. And Dr. Michael Lake kind of went out on a limb for me, and he gave my books to Tom Horn. He actually helped a lot in that process of getting us introduced. And so Tom read the books and apparently liked them, because shortly after he called me and invited me to do some programs for Skywatch TV. So we were living in Michigan at the time, my wife and I and our kids were in Michigan. So we made the trip down to Missouri and met everybody. We met Tom and the whole Skywatch team, and just had a blast. We did a couple programs, and so I was already familiar with what they were doing, but this was their first time meeting me. And from there, we just kind of hit it off. We realized that we work really well together, and it wasn't too long after that Tom had called me and Christina and asked us to come and work for Skywatch TV and offered us jobs. So now we're hosting a show called Into the Multiverse on Skywatch TV, and still writing books. So I had this idea a little more than a year ago, I was starting to compile research on CERN, and it was actually on my way back from those programs where I had this idea about writing a book about CERN, but putting it in a way that anybody can understand, so it's accessible to everybody, but showing how it ties in with Bible prophecy and how vastly our world is being changed based on quantum research that's being done right now. About the idea, and I said, if I write something like this, would you be interested in publishing it? And he said, well, would
Josh, I don't know if you can hear me or not, but your Skype is cutting in and out, and you were interrupted a few times mid-sentence. We were unable to.
Actually, you're frozen in time, Josh. It looks like you just got shot.
Looks like you're taking a nap. No, but we will get Josh Peck back up and running.
Sure, we will.
Even if we only had to go with the audio, if for some reason Skype's having issues. We saw with Greg Jackson, the voice to picture was a little out of sync.
Yes.
It seemed to continue with Mr. Peck, and then it froze mid-conversation, and then it dumped him. So we're going to try and get him back and make sure that we have a good connection, whether that be video or audio. But what Josh is talking about leads into a number of important areas for not only science and human beings in general, but us as Christians, because many people believe that science and Christianity and the Bible are, they're two separate things, when in reality, the Bible and science, if done, science looked at properly, confirms and conforms to the Bible. So, we have Josh back. Hey, okay.
Are you guys able to see and hear me?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Sorry about that. Not sure what happened.
I was gonna say you look like a Smurf, but I'm kidding, of course. I'm joking, but no, it's a clear picture and good sound right now. So
okay, good. If that keeps being a problem, I can move to the cell phone if we have to, and that won't be an issue. But I'm glad that it's working now. What was the last thing that you were able to hear me say?
When you started your last area of talking, you started to your sentence and then it cut in and out, and we couldn't understand what you were saying.
Let's pick up something a little bit different if we can right now. Let's talk about CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. Let's get right into the meat of things.
Yes.
For those who might not be familiar, they're two separate things, aren't they?
Yeah, the LHC is the actual particle collider, and it's on the border of France and Switzerland. So the actual machine itself, this big circular particle collider, that's the LHC, which stands for Large Hadron Collider. Large because it's big. Hadron is a class of particles, so they usually collide protons. So a proton is classified as a hadron, so hadron and then collider because they collide it. So that's the LHC. And then CERN is the actual governing body that makes all the decisions as to what happens, what types of experiments that they are going to do with this machine. So CERN is like the people in charge. It's the organization for or the European Organization for Nuclear Research. So that's the difference between CERN and LHC, those two things.
Okay, that's good. Good. Because I use those terms interchangeably, erroneously, obviously. So now that's good to know. All right.
And apparently CERN goes back into ancient times. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. So the weird thing is, as it turns out, the LHC is actually built over an ancient Roman city called Apollyacum. And they actually had to, when they were first building the LHC, they actually had to stop construction because they dug up all these ruins, these ancient Roman ruins. But as it turns out, that ancient city, they worshipped the god Apollo, and they believed that that's where the bottomless pit was that we read about in the Bible, in the book of Revelation, and Greek mythology has stories about Tartarus and stuff like that. Well, they believed that that's where the bottomless pit was, and that's where Apollo would ascend from. So to me and to Tom, it's a little too much of a coincidence that they would happen to just build the LHC there of all places, because it's a very awkward place that they decided to build it. It's on the border of two countries. What's the reason for doing that? Also, there's no real scientific need for this thing to be built underground, and it is built underground. Now, they have a couple of things on their website where they'll say, well, they built it underground because real estate is expensive in that area. Well, don't build it in that area, plain and simple. There's plenty of other places where you don't have to take up expensive real estate to do it. And then they'll also say that being underground provides shielding, not from particles coming in, but from whatever they're doing coming out. But in this big machine, it's full of magnets, and everything's really insulated. So that's not an issue, because there are people... If radiation was an issue, if they were worried about that affecting the experiment somehow, there are people that work underground in the machine. So they're not concerned about them, but they're concerned. It just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. So what I believe may have happened is whoever was in power at the time to make the decision of where this thing was going to be built, I believe that they knew that that was an area that in ancient times the false god Apollo was worshipped and venerated, and they had these beliefs about the bottomless pit and everything, because that goes in line with a lot of goals that they actually are public about. Like, for example, they want to open a portal and see what's on the other side. They actually say that they want to measure extra dimensions, higher dimensions, which I don't know how they think they're going to be able to do that, but they do have some ideas on how a type of portal might be opened if it hasn't been already. Also, the thing about CERN is a lot of times when they make a discovery or when they make some kind of new development, we don't hear about it for months after. Like when they discovered gravity waves, for example, that wasn't at CERN, that was at LIGO. But when they detected gravity waves for the first time, we didn't hear about it for months after, for about 6 months after. So they tend to do that within physics. Whenever there's a discovery like the Higgs boson, we don't hear about it till months and months after. So there could be stuff going on there now that hasn't been made public. But the concerning thing is what has been made public about wanting to open a portal, measure these extra dimensions, and possibly communicate with what's on the other side.
Oh, okay. And that's very interesting. Josh, kind of moving forward here, I'm going to turn this one topic into a two-part thing. You say quantum physics is for everyone, and another part, you said the basics of quantum physics for everyone at home in the simplest terms possible. What is quantum physics?
Yeah, and a lot of times when people hear quantum physics, it's kind of a scary sounding, because, again, we live in a world that tells people they have to be some sort of genius to even be able to understand the basics of it, and it's just not true. Quantum physics is for everybody, but basically all quantum physics is, it's the study of the smallest of the small. The word quantum just means the absolute smallest of the small. You can't, where you get to a point where what you're looking at, a quantum particle, isn't really made of anything. It's not made of smaller parts. It's just like a little ball of energy or something. That's what the word,
Would splitting the atom, when they created the hydrogen bomb, would that be quantum physics?
Oh, sure, yeah, okay. It would actually fall more along particle physics, because an atom isn't a quantum particle, but it is made of quantum particles. So quantum physics, were applied there too. But absolutely. So and then the word physics, it just means how things behave in nature. So they're trying to understand the basic building blocks of reality, which is really cool. I mean, it's a really fascinating thing. The problem, though, and this is what scares a lot of Christians away from a lot of scientific topics, but especially things like quantum physics. A lot of times when a scientist or a physicist will present his or her findings to the public, They don't really tend to explain it very well because they're used to talking to other physicists. But even if they do, they put their own interpretation on the discovery, and they try to call the whole thing science. For example, there's a physicist that I really like, and he was talking about quantum field theory, which is the idea. It's the most accurate science known to man, and we can get into that a little bit more later. But basically, it just means that everything in reality, instead of being made of particles, it's actually made of fields. And when we look at fields, we see particles because of our limited perception. But that goes into other areas. But he was talking about quantum field theory, and he said that quantum field theory proves there's no afterlife because there's no quantum field to take the information of consciousness anywhere. So that's the difference between observation and interpretation. He was giving his interpretation on something that's observed. Like, quantum field theory is an accurate science. It's perfectly acceptable. Actually, the LHC at CERN wouldn't work at all if quantum field theory wasn't true. But the way that he interprets that is he looks at quantum field theory and then he says, ah, there must not be an afterlife. But again, that's his opinion. That's his interpretation of the data. So that part isn't science. That's just an opinion. So what we can do as Christians, we can take the interpretation away. And when I look into quantum field theory, I think that, to me, and again, this is my interpretation, so I'm kind of doing the same thing, but to me, I think it actually lends a lot more evidence towards the fact that there must be a God, because all this energy has to be coming from somewhere. You know, energy cannot be created or destroyed, so where did it come from? And again, that's my interpretation. And if we're honest, as Christians, we do this too. If we, you could give five different Christians the same Bible verse, and you're going to get five different interpretations of what that Bible verse means. So everybody does it, you know. But I think if we can look at scientific discoveries and learn how to interpret them ourselves, we don't have to throw all the science away. We can actually keep the science, we can keep the findings, and just put our own interpretation on it. And if we're Bible-believing Christians, we can, we can apply that to get our interpretation from, and that's likely going to be more accurate anyway.
Yeah, and you know what, Josh, you do, yeah. And I like this, because longtime listeners to our program, your program, this is what we strive to do. I mean, we assist people in thinking, researching for themselves, but thinking, yes. You know, and you serve as a conduit for understanding in this realm, which is many people are, you know, when I looked at your books, I mean, I gotta tell you, a lot of this I thought was over my head, but when you start really understanding, which in my case I read slowly, and then you start understanding what you're saying, and then you apply it to what's in the Bible, and hey, things start to kind of mesh together. And but you're right, you know, the five different verses, five different interpretations, but with the proper assistance of understanding, for understanding, I think that we come across with a greater picture. Now, with what you're saying about the quantum field, and tell me if this applies here. If not,
sure.
If not, we'll kick it down the road. But I've always believed that consciousness resides outside of one's body. Yes. I'm not even sure that makes sense.
Oh, it makes sense. It does to me.
Okay. And accessing that consciousness, for example, I to help me understand that, I picture like this big hard drive somewhere in the sky. Okay. Of course, that's not what it is, folks. But you know, and we have a portion of that hard drive, as does all of humanity or human beings, and we access that through, dare I say, quantum physics or quantum field? I mean, is that...
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that brings up a really interesting point, too, because right now physicists don't have a good explanation or a way of explaining mathematically or scientifically what consciousness is. You know, the best that they have is just a brief just a brief explanation saying that, well, it's the state of being self-aware. But okay, how do you show that in the lab, or there's no really good explanation. But one of the leading ones right now that some physicists are looking into. Most physicists think that this is totally speculative and they don't take it seriously, but there might actually be something to this. It's called quantum brain dynamics. And what it is it says that consciousness is actually an interaction with a quantum field, like the Higgs field, for example. We interact with the Higgs field every day, and that's actually what gives us mass. Us interacting, our particles interacting with the Higgs field is what gives us mass. So it's not when the Higgs boson was discovered in 2012, it kind of got turned around in the media because physicists didn't really explain it too well. The physicists usually don't want to talk about quantum field theory because we live in a world where we think of particles, and it's hard to kind of turn that on its head. But so they kind of just settled and said, well, the Higgs boson causes mass. But yeah, we'll get more into that.
Yeah, folks, you're listening to Josh Peck on this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Josh is a prolific author. Cherubim Chariots, Quantum Creation, Disclosure, and his latest book, Abaddon Ascending, co-authored with Tom Horn. And his books don't disappoint. I can't imagine that this one would, especially with Tom Horn as a co-author. We're going to be right back with Josh Peck to get into CERN and a number of other important biblical information. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Josh Peck for hour three.
Our very special guest, Mr. Josh Peck, prolific author, member of Skywatch TV. All of his contact information is in the program description. And we're so lucky to have him and explaining things. You know, when we look at events today, there is a biblical explanation, obviously a spiritual reason, but there's also a biblical explanation that taps into the quantum physics, and this is what Josh Peck is talking about. And it's very interesting, especially when we talk about CERN and stuff. And Joe's been all over the research on CERN and following that with Josh, and it's very interesting to talk about this because this is really what it's all about in the larger sense. Before we get back to Josh, I a couple of announcements, please, folks. Tomorrow, tune into our program with Mike Zullo. He and Carl Gallops. Now, Mike had, in case you joined us late, the announcement at the beginning of the program, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, along with Mike Zullo, had a press conference in Maricopa County earlier today, and they reaffirmed and also gave new information about the Obama PDF copy, the document that appeared on whitehouse.gov. That was, and I'm being very careful here with what I say, this is not an eligibility issue. This is just merely addressing the legitimacy of the document. And of course, they disclosed once again 9 points of forgery, as well as the identification of the source document used to create the PDF file on the whitehouse.gov website. We're going to be talking at length with Mike Zullo and Carl Gallops tomorrow about this. And so it's going to be an extremely important program. They're going to answer a lot of questions, and you're going to have a lot of your questions answered as to the origins of this document and connecting some extremely important dots. And once more, for the people who are joining us late, this is why I wanted to make sure that everyone lines up for tomorrow night's program. Also, Omaha Steaks, Search Bar HH, Christmas Shopping. Also, Casper.com/CFP Radio. Mattress Time, Betty Buy Time, Best Mattresses Around, Casper.com/CFP Radio. And coupon code right now, CFP Radio for $50 off your purchase of a mattress. T.C. Joseph, folks, T.C. Joseph, this generation series of novels, what a great set of books. These are the books, kind of books that you can give to people that are, well, we'll say that are perhaps not really into biblical prophecy, and this kind of is a backdoor to them to awaken them, because T.C. Joseph's novels, they move through recent history. They take you on a journey through recent history to the events that are just over the horizon. He's got a very witty style and a fascinating character development. All three of his novels provide a fascinating read. The first of the series is Precipice. Book two is Pentecost, and book three is Penance. We have all three. We love them, and we have given them out as tools to awaken friends and family members to the perilous times that we face. Raving reviews on Kirkus, by Kirkus and Blue Ink reviews. So it's really a great gift for someone in your family or for yourself. It makes great reading. Again, T.C. Joseph, This Generation Series of Novels. That's T.C. Joseph's This Generation Series of Novels. And you can get them at Amazon. Or thisgenerationseries.com for more information. But back to Josh Peck. Josh, thanks for hanging with us and being part of our program tonight.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for having me on again. And, before the break, I was talking about, the mystery of consciousness. And, it's actually kind of cool because the first time that you and I talked about this, was about a year ago, maybe a little more, when I was, when me and Tom were first putting research together for this book. And I was just getting into, the idea of consciousness and what physicists are trying to do in defining it. And that interview, actually, I should tell your audience that interview is included in a series of interviews that Skywatch kind of put together called The Coming Technocalypse. So for your audience, I'm sure they love you guys, and I'm in there too, but reason I bring that up is that people are going to get the book anyway, Abaddon Ascending. If they're going to get the book, go to skywatchtv.com and click on the banner, because you can get over $400 worth of free materials with this book. Other books and CDs, DVDs, the actual first season of Into the Multiverse, my show, and a bunch of other stuff. But the reason I bring it up is because it's for a limited time only. We're running out, so if people are going to do it now, because it's not going to be available for much longer. But in that Coming Technocalypse audio CD set or MP3 disc, I was kind of just getting into this idea of consciousness and what it means that it might be an interaction with a quantum field. And for those who might be joining us and didn't hear the first part in the first half hour, basically the idea is called quantum brain dynamics, and it defines consciousness as an interaction in a quantum field. So an example of a quantum field interaction, which is just fancy words for saying you go through something and it does some stuff. But the Higgs field is actually what gives us our mass, what gives particles their mass. Without the Higgs field, every particle would be massless like a photon, and every particle would travel at the speed of light like photons. So photons, the particle of light, they don't interact with the Higgs field at all, so they have no mass. Every other particle that we're made of does, and so that's what gives us mass. So it's an interaction. So as we pass through the Higgs field and, you know, move around and everything, that's what does it. So the idea is consciousness might be the same, the same idea. And they have hypothetical terms for these things. So the field, if it exists, is called the cortical field. And because every quantum field has a particle that it's associated with, for example, the electromagnetic field has photons and the gravitational field has gravitons, the cortical field, the field of consciousness, would have a particle called a corticon. And again, not a lot of physicists take this idea seriously, because as of right now, there's really no good experimental data to show that this is the case. But it could be, and right now it's the only explanation that's even somewhat viable. So if it is, this brings up some interesting questions. What if, because the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, they're able to create other particles by smashing photons together. Because basically what's happening is when these protons, and I said photons, excuse me, protons, when these protons smash together, it causes energy to ripple out into other surrounding fields. So what happens is when a field vibrates, that creates particles. That's actually what a particle is it's a vibration in a field. So that's how they're able to create new particles out of these collisions. Well, the idea is if the cortical field is real, it would be everywhere around us. It would take up all points in space. But they should be able to create corticons at CERN or other particle colliders. Now, if they were able to do that, this might actually be the thing that causes the rise of artificial intelligence. Because think about it this way. Right now, the path that they're going towards artificial intelligence and creating an AI beast-type system is a lot of money, a lot of programmers, a lot of code. You know, it's just a big hassle. And even what they have now isn't near perfect. But imagine if they could just create their own consciousness from these particles, from these collisions. It would be a lot cheaper because they're already doing particle collisions, so they wouldn't have to add much to their cost to do this. And it would be a lot more efficient because it's what nature is doing anyway. So, but in the wrong hands, that type of technology can be incredibly dangerous, because if they can create a consciousness, well, that's going to leave us Christians with some questions we'll have to find an answer for. Is it a true consciousness? Is it a demon? Is it something that would have rights? You know, what type of entity would this be?
You know, and sorry for interrupting, Josh, we see a lot of, you know, with this battle between minimum wage and this technological boom that we've seen, a lot of companies saying, well, we're going to replace, you know, a lot of minimum wage jobs from cashiers and whatnot and replace those with machines, kind of like they do with bank tellers and kiosks. And there's an argument out there with these robots and machines, you know, do they have a conscious? Can they understand, learn, and imply the human experience, feelings, and all that? And there's a thin line there, like you said, with the artificial intelligence. Is this something that will evolve into something that is more advanced than a human and take on human attributes? And that is a big question when it comes to you know, how far we go with machines. And is there a danger there? There's always been this throughout history, recent history, especially with science fiction novels and whatnot, and from the movie Frankenstein, that, you know, you build a machine and the machine gets a mind of its own, and then the humans are the natural enemy of the machine. Is this, in your experience or research, a possibility?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think what could happen, one of the ways that this could play out, Tom and I do believe that CERN or particle colliders like that, quantum technology, really does play a large role in biblical prophecy. So we read in Revelation 9 that somehow, Apollyon or, Abaddon comes out of the abyss. And there's a lot of different ideas about how that might work. Is CERN involved? And that's actually a big portion of the book. But there's different ways that this might play out. I mean, they could open a portal at CERN and Abaddon could just come out of it with all these horrible locusts that, you know, along with it. But it could even be something more subtle. Like if the whole cortical field and all that is right and they develop corticons and, they're able to implement it into a machine and essentially create an artificial intelligence. Cause that's actually something that they're actively looking for at CERN, is a way to implement artificial intelligence, to sift through all the data that they have. They have so much data from these collisions that they can't go through it all on their own. And they actually started, uploading it to the internet, hoping that amateur physicists can help just sift through all this data. So they're looking for, two things, artificial intelligence and quantum computing. They want to use those to, sift through all this data. But imagine if they use an artificial intelligence to do it, and this thing kind of wakes up and has a mind of its own and can make its own decisions. What if that is actually Abaddon? And now it has full access to the internet, which means it would have full access to everybody and everything. There's another dark side to this too, like that's not dark enough, but the governments that are in, that would be in control of this technology, if they develop a way to manipulate corticons, they could actually manipulate our consciousness, because if our consciousness is just an interaction in a field, and they learn how to manipulate that, they could essentially wipe you out and put a new consciousness in you. So if this artificial intelligence thing, you know, comes alive, and it would have that type of capability. And now we're back in the days of Nimrod, where everybody was of one mind, one speech, one language, you know. And actually, in that passage, when you look into the Hebrew, it's almost like a type of hive mind that the people of Earth at that time were under Nimrod and following everything he said. So you almost got like a repeat of that. So it's insane.
Yeah, and you say hive mind, the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, like IBM computer program Watson. The internet, for example, collects and monitors every keystroke of every person, to every search that they conduct, every habit that they have online. And now companies are tracking people offline. Facebook announced that they track non-users offline as well as online. And it's just mind-blowing to think of the possibilities. And when we read in Joel, where it talks about how the armies will not break ranks, they will, you know, march and destroy, and no bullet or, you know, spear will pierce them, nothing will stop them, to put it in my own words, and they will continue on. It is, when you read it and you think about what's available today, it is almost like it has to be some sort of machine, or it's some supernatural spiritual entity.
Yeah, or possibly even a little of both. And yeah, because those are the same, that locust army, it's the same locust army that's described in the book of Revelation. And yeah, these things, they're clearly, you know, they're from the abyss, so they're clearly you know, spiritual or extra dimensional, we might even say. And it's actually kind of funny when scientists talk about extra dimensions, when physicists talk about extra dimensions, they'll never use these terms, but essentially they're talking about heaven and hell. I mean, there's no difference. They're talking about spiritual reality. When you actually look at what they're describing and what they believe and what they think about extra dimensions, it's the same stuff that we believe about heaven. They just don't go as far as to include God and all that. But they have this active plan right now to try to communicate with something on the other side. They seem pretty okay with the idea that not only do extra dimensions exist, but that there's intelligences in those dimensions that are waiting for us to make contact. And it's strange, because this has actually been going on for about a decade, at least, if not longer. But there was a documentary that was narrated by a popular physicist, Brian Greene, and he's a brilliant physicist, and I have a couple of his books, and I like his writing a lot. But it was really strange, because it was just a basic, you know, documentary on quantum physics and stuff, and it was really interesting. But then they got to this weird part where they're talking about how gravitons could be used to send a message into another dimension. Gravity has somehow, gravity, just the way it naturally is, it has the ability to transcend into other dimensions. It leaks into other dimensions. And right now, that's actually the leading theory as to why gravity is so much weaker than the other forces. Einstein was looking for a theory of everything, a unified field theory. He wanted to be able to take all the forces and be able to unify them into one mathematical theory, and he wasn't able to do it because and no physicist has been able to, because of gravity. They can do it with the other three forces, which are electromagnetism, strong nuclear force, and weak nuclear force. They can get those in so you know, but gravity, for some reason, it's so much weaker than the other forces, they have no way to make it fit in with the rest. So one of the leading theories is that gravity might leak into other dimensions, which actually it goes a little bit into string theory, this idea that particles are made from tiny vibrating strings. And most particles would be attached to our universe, would be attached somehow. It's actually called a brain, B-R-A-N-E, which is short for membrane, but other particles are kind of locked in here. But gravitons would be made of closed, like looped strings, where they can transcend out and leak into other dimensions. Now, if that's true, what they want to do, and this is what they were talking about in this that section of this documentary by Brian Greene, they want to be able to take a string of gravitons and alter the spin of each one to create like a 1001, you know, binary type of code, kind of like computer language. And they want to be able to send it off into another dimension, which it would naturally do anyway, then put up a detector and see if they get a reply, which is really strange. And when they were talking about that in the documentary, they were talking about parallel universes and you know, maybe they're inhabited by other versions of us and things like that. But when they actually showed, like, a graphic of this, they had a little animation about it, they showed a gray alien picking up the phone. Now, what does a gray alien have anything to do with higher dimensions? You know, I mean, according to them, if aliens are real, they're on another planet, but still within our universe. Now, we might think, well, that maybe they have extra-dimensional origin or spiritual origins. You know, maybe these are demons or fallen angels, right? So it was weird that they portrayed this alien, this gray alien picking up the phone and talking to Brian Greene and, you know, but it was just weird imagery. So, but they've been talking about that. That documentary is about 10 years old now. They've been talking about it for that long. As far as we know, they haven't been able to manipulate gravitons yet, but they are, and they might have already, and we just don't know about it, but they are at least one step closer since they were able to detect gravity waves. So the next step would be to replicate that in the lab. And then they'll be able to actually manipulate gravitons and do this communication thing. But my question is, who are they expecting to talk to? Because they must have a view of these entities that they're constantly watching us. Otherwise, how would they even know to be receiving a message, you know? How would they know that we're going to send one through? So they must have a view of these extra-dimensional entities that they're constantly watching us. They're constantly involved somehow in what we say and do. Yeah, again, my question is, who are they going to actually be talking to? And I think Revelation 9, where it talks about Abaddon and the Abyss and the locust beings, these amalgamation of different types of just horrific beasts, I think that's the answer. I think that's who they're going to be talking to, and that might possibly be what invites them into our realm. That okay. might be the key to the bottomless pit.
Okay, and then that's where I was going next, because we know... you know, from Nimrod and Babel, a lot of people theorize that the pyramids were built with tools of a much higher technology than we have today, and that at some point, probably at the flood, that all that was wiped out along with those higher technological civilizations. And put that on hold for a moment to the aliens. You know, we see the ancient alien astronaut theorists and all these people who believe that there are extra terrestrials out there that are outside of the creation of Earth. And just me personally, I know that there is no alien, as many people think. It is spiritual entities, interdimensional entities masquerading as aliens or a higher intelligence that have guided the elite. So the ancient technology back in Babylon with Nimrod and the Tower of Babel, this was their way of communicating or, showing their dominance and gaining their, you know, one world control, over everything. Now, is it possible that CERN was built, as you just alluded to, for the purpose of bringing or allowing these entities the doorway and technology to regain what they once had and were trying to accomplish?
Yes, I believe. I absolutely believe so.
Wait a second. Before you answer that, okay,
sure.
You're going to have to dumb this down one more level for me, okay? When you talk about when you talk about different dimensions, okay, I get, I think I understand the idea that we're not talking about, like, when you reference the alien, for example, the phone, the little gray guy using a phone. Was it a rotary dial or a cell phone or what was it? Never mind. Okay.
It was a payphone.
It was a payphone. All right. All right. So I think I get that, that we're talking not about, inhabitants of other planets, but right. other dimensions, right?
Yes.
And there, we're not talking about life forms from Mars, but we're talking about life forms from other dimensions that are demon slash...
Yes, yes. And think about this. The story of Jesus, when he was in the desert fasting for 40 days.
Yeah.
And the devil tempted him, first with telling him to turn rock into bread, second saying, you know, throw yourself off this cliff.
Right.
The third, it says that the devil took Jesus to the pinnacle, in the height of the pinnacle. Now, this was not in any dimension that we would understand in our world.
Right.
So there is dimensions, and you know, you hear the first, second, and third heaven, that there's different levels of heaven. Think of it as, you know, the term is being raptured. The devil raptured Jesus up into the top pinnacle and offered all the kingdoms of the world. That dimension was out of the sight of the human eye, just like heaven. We know heaven's real; it exists. It's there, and
but
Jesus
where?
Showed himself. Well, that's the question.
And where are these other dimensions? I guess that's my question.
They're actually all around us. If we think right. of it this way. We exist in three dimensions of space and one of time. Let's set aside time for a second because that's a whole other deal. But just the three dimensions of space that we live in, we have left and right, so that constitutes one dimension. We have forward and back, that's another dimension. We have up or down. So one of the easiest ways to understand what an extra dimension would be, and every physicist that talks about extra dimensions, they use this analogy because it just works so well. Chuck Missler even used this analogy, the one of Flatland. So basically, imagine a two-dimensional universe, something that's just completely flat. It doesn't have to be very big. It could be the size of your tabletop. And imagine that this flat space, it has left, right, forward, backward, but no up or down. So the inhabitants of Flatland, we'll call them Flatlanders, they could just be simple shapes like squares and circles. They can see what's in front of them, but everything would look like it's, you know, as a line. So they would see lines and, you know, just two-dimensional lines in front of them, but they have no concept of up or down. So now what if I, as like a three-dimensional being, what if I wanted to interact with a Flatlander or let a Flatlander know that I was there? I could literally look down at the Flatlander and I could see every part of the Flatlander, but he wouldn't be able to see me unless I'm right in front of him in some way. So we'll get more into that after the break.
Yes, we will. Absolutely. Folks, we are talking with author Josh Peck. He's the author of a number of fantastic books, Disclosure being one of my favorites, Cherubim Chariots, as well as Quantum Creation. A book I need to go to college to read and understand. But when we come back, we're going to get into our hour number two interview with Mr. Josh Peck right after this. Stay with us.